Good morning, Albuquerque, and welcome to another installment of ABQ Connect Now. We are a business radio show. We're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelary with Bank of the West, along with
DJ Heckes with Exhib It.
And thank you, DJ, for being our exclusive sponsor of ABQ Connect Now.
And co-host.
So, DJ, a friend of ours we've known for many years, please introduce Mr. Gonzalez.
Yes, I'm happy to talk about our guest today because he has a local business, and it really comes from a family-owned business that he's taken over since 1986 called Mark Pardo Salon and Spa. Mark Pardo is our guest today, and we're really happy for him to share. You know, he actually has over 150 employees. I am so curious to learn how you grew so well since 1986, and thanks for being our guest today.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate that. You know, it was when I first started, I was behind the chair myself, and I needed to replace myself. So the foundation that started that was education and training. So after I trained three people, I would take 5 hours away from what I was doing and continue to train and focus more on training and then build other trainers. So I would say education is probably the key of the growth of our company. It's been the foundation. My father had a business saying, he used to say, when you're green, you grow. When you're ripe, you rot. And I think if you apply that to any part of your life, I think it kind of makes sense.
When you're green, you grow. When you're ripe, you rot. I like that.
And that's awesome. And also, you have a lot of Aveda products. And you've been, what does it say? Pure professional for 8 years?
Pure professional was a trainer for Aveda. I was there. I trained for them for 8 years.
Wow. And how does that – now, you guys also have grown. Let's talk about how many locations you have and where you started and where you are today and what you envision in the future.
Right now we have four physical locations, two business. We have the Mark Pardo Salons. We have another division called Proteges, which is our training salon division, which had its own freestanding standing building, and I relocated those into the salon. So we actually expanded that program. The training program. Then we have the Aveda Institute, New Mexico.
And that's on Wantabo, isn't it?
That was Proteges was on Wantabo. Now, what I did with that building is I expanded the Institute school also, the Aveda Institute, and our corporate offices were there. So I gave that corporate office space back to the school for more classrooms. So they're reoccupying that and repurposing that for expansion in the SEology department. And then I'm repurposing the old Proteges building to make that our new corporate resource center, education center for both this institute and for Mark Pardo Salons.
So if our listening audience, male or female, wants to come check out your facilities and learn about what you can do to enhance their overall look of their body, hair, let's talk about where you're located and the services.
We have three spa salon locations at Paseo, Wyoming, Wantabo and Lomas area, and then we have one in Paseo, Wyoming. Then we have Knob Hill, which is a smaller location, which just focuses mostly on hair and light skin.
And you've developed such a big name for yourself. What do you attribute that to?
I think it's quality. We focus on quality. I think
and experience. Talk about that experience when
experience
you walk in.
Experience is, you know, the Aveda has a concept called the experience wheel, and so every client comes in, receives a. Consultation is very thorough. We do what we call value-added servicing. We do stress relief massage, makeup touch-ups, hand treatments, foot treatments. That's all included in your service. It's not just the haircut.
And it's really
we like to call it an experience.
And, you know, when I go there, it's like, oh, would you like a cup of hot tea? You know, when you're getting your haircut or colored or whatever you're doing, you get a little shoulder massage. I mean, it's the same thing every time, and it makes you feel special. And isn't that what the audience wants?
That's our point of difference. That's what I would call it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Our guest is Mark Gonzalez. I've known you since 1988. Sold you a membership when I worked at the Hispano Chamber. Javier Torres.
Yes.
I've known him for 1,000 years through Aveda as well. But what I've always been impressed with you and Mark is the brand, DJ's point, your brand. I want you to amplify what that means because in the mind of the consumer, even me, you know, and I don't go to Pardo's, I probably should, but even in my mind, when I hear the word Pardo's, there's a sort of a par excellence, a je ne sais quoi, that is just inherent to what you've built. How have you constructed the brand Pardo's? Where did that originate from, and how do you continue to sustain that je ne sais quoi?
Well, originally, you know, Pardo's just, I call it my stage name or my trade name, because Mark Gonzalez is my full name. My father started the business as Pardo's Barbershop, and after he passed on, I just thought the expansion of it, you know, the Pardo sounded like a cool name, sounded French, and so I just called it Mark Pardo and expanded it from there. But the branding has been a continuation of marketing. I feel that, you know, people, the brand awareness is created by constant, you know, constant imagery, but also being part of, involved in the community. I think that's our biggest brand awareness. We're involved in the community in so many ways. We're with United Way, and we fund various children's and women's and education organizations to support them. And every year we do a fundraising fashion show with United, connected with the United Way. So I think that really is probably our biggest brand awareness that we've created, but also the imagery. We build billboard campaigns. We focus on the large publications of Albuquerque Magazine, and just put, it's like Pepsi and Coca-Cola. You know, everybody knows what they are, but you've got to put that name in front. So really, when we advertise, it's for brand awareness, not so much for bringing in new clients. Because in our industry, we've tracked it. In fact, we don't even track it anymore. 95% or more of all of our business comes in through referrals. Our clients are really who's marketing for us. They're the ones who've grown our business.
Well, and that's true, but also because you're so active in the community, everybody sees you and knows that you're involved. And I think that plays a big role too.
I think it's important. We've been in business for 43 years. I think it's important for a community like Albuquerque to support us this long. I think it's our responsibility as a business to give back.
Yeah, that's so true.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I'm authoring a book called Hippopotamus Business, and inside the hippopotamus demands greatness. Unfortunately, I've said it before and been criticized for it. In New Mexico, I think sometimes we collectively celebrate mediocrity. What I've known about your brand is that you demand greatness. And I imagine when you hire folks, you have an integrity, a certain standard of excellence. Would you agree with that? And amplify inside the store what you demand as an owner of your employees to deliver great or excellent service. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but can you amplify anything along those lines?
I think people are attracted to that. I think people, you know, I think we attract the right people. They identify with them being quality, and they see the quality in us. And with that, it just, there's an attraction factor there that I think people are drawn to who we are. So I think we attract the quality professional.
Do you have a vetting process? I worked at Disneyland for a short period. And as dumb as it sounds, the folks that are working at Disneyland, from the chipmunk guy to the Mickey Mouse guy, whatever, believe it or not, there's a standard of, they cast you into a role. You're not just a janitor. You're cast as the janitor there. They take that stuff seriously. But, you know, I admire it because there's a standard of greatness there at Disneyland. You don't find at other amusement parks. What I'm getting at is, do you vet out your hirees the same way?
You know, the education, the interview process, we start with the screening process, and then they go through a group interview. And then, like I said, they go through a protégé training division. And so through there, we start screening and developing. And before they even work with clients, they're working in the salon, they're working in the environment. They're also working to see if they can work with other people. So it's a process. It's not just like we bring them in and then put them to work. It's a process of education and building them. Because we do it a certain way at Mark Pardo, and so they need to know what that certain way is. Kind of like the Disney. I know some people that have gone and trained at the Disney World, and there is, like you said, the process. Even the cricket's got to sound a certain way there.
Yeah, and when you go vet and go through that process, of course, they have to be a licensed cosmetologist, right?
Correct.
And do you go to the schools and recruit, like CNM and different cosmetologies? How do you find that person?
We still look at all the other schools, people that are attracted to us and want to come with us and work with our brand. CNM, I helped create the CNM program at Cosmetology. It's a two-year program, and they'll be able to get an associate's degree.
So that's a lot longer than the school,
yes.
Like on San Mateo near Academy, right? What's the difference in going to CNM and going to that 10-month or whatever program?
Well, I think it kind of shows their commitment to the profession. You know, I think it's, like I said, it's very similar. This cosmetology aspect of what they're doing, they get the same thing they would get also like at the Veda Institute, what we offer. But that associate's program kind of furthers them to go to continuing at UNM and get that bachelor's in business.
Wow.
If they want to continue on. So I think that's a good program. And when I founded the Institute, I had to step away because it was conflict of interest. But it's a great program.
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. My name is Jeffrey Candelaria, along with
DJ Heckes.
And DJ, thank you for being the co-sponsor, or excuse me, the not only a co-host, but the exclusive sponsor of ABQ Connect Now as the owner of Exhibit. So, Mark, getting back to what we were discussing earlier, you've been in this business for 40-some years. What are some of the striking changes that you've seen as an owner of a business, as an owner of a salon inside that space in business, let's say 40 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and a day? I know that's a kind of a big question, but what are some of the changes you've seen, and how have you adapted to those changes?
It's interesting. You know, like I said, we started as a barbershop, and, you know, in the mid-80s, you know, we were charging $12, $15 for a haircut. And that was a fair rate back in those days. And, you know, 20, 30 years later, there's still barbershops charging the same amount. So I have a challenge with that because really it almost indicates the business, the industry hasn't grown with as a profession, because I really regard our business as a profession. And the fact that we're, you know, we're impacting people's lives about how they feel about themselves and how they look, you know, as a professional, I think it's a very intimate business. And so, if I was to relate quality and pricing, to me, I think the market's segmented. It's the budget, lower end, price-wise, and the high-end quality where we compete at, and then the middle of the road. And the recession, when that came in, that really hurt the middle. You know, so people had to – it shrank that business quite a bit, and then so people had to either choose one or the other. And I like competing at the other end.
So how did you adapt? 2009, 2008. So that was a big portion of your pie, and now folks are more budget conscious. How did you adapt to that change?
The recession didn't hurt us. You know, we didn't drop down the – you know, typically the salon industry was down 20-30%
across
the
board. Well, you know why? Women aren't going to give up their hair, makeup, and nails.
But the spa business was the downturn part, you know, the higher premium price. But yet the hair business maintained itself and maintained us all the way through. And I think part of it, like you're saying, that people got to look good if they're going to go job. If you lost your job, you still got to look good for a job interview. So they come in. So we didn't recover. We didn't lose any business during that time. But the problem that we had was we couldn't really have that hockey puck growth that we expected. So we finally – you know, we did some work on leadership, and that's in the last 2 years, it's really turned it around. I think that was the key. I think individual leadership and looking at that, where they're responsible in terms of growing the business.
You know, and also you're a member of the 2 to 10 Project. What does that mean?
The 2 to 10 Project is a nationwide project in North America where they take salon owners who have two or more locations, up to 10 locations, and over $3 million in sales. And so it's an elite group throughout the country of salon owners who study and research and compare best case practices in the industry.
So you're like a renowned community activist and a certified strategy business coach. So tell me what is your why in business and where you're going in the future? What do you attribute that to on your success? Because we all start from the inside.
Well, you know, as I evolve in business, my purpose anymore is to improve the industry and improve it for the people in it. I mean, that to me is where I drive my satisfaction now. I enjoy seeing new kids coming into the industry. You know, you look how our industry is used in so many different ways. I mean, all the editorial work. Every time you look at a magazine, somebody in my industry had something to do with that. Every time you watch a movie, that hairstyle, that makeup had something to do with somebody in my industry. TV shows, the movie industry in Albuquerque, you know, we do a lot of shows with that. We send students or even our staff. We have a design team. Creative
wow.
team that works and just does exclusive work. We competed in NAHA, which is the North American Hairdresser Awards, and we just finished a photo shoot a month ago, and it looks very promising this year. We've been nominated, never won it yet, but I think this could be our year.
Wow, put Albuquerque on the map.
Yeah.
So our guest is Mark Gonzalez. He's the owner of Pardo's Salon and Spa. So Mark, getting back to what you just discussed, I work in banking, and there are some frustrations in the industry that I face. Sometimes banking can appear to be a little impersonal and a little dehuman because a lot of times certain banks will attract you as a client, and then all of a sudden you have an 800 number as your, you know, managing a counterpart on the other side. So that's frustrating for me. I overcome that by doing what I do. What about your industry? What are some of the things that are frustrating for you, and how do you overcome some of those industry frustrations?
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing, it's kind of a, I don't know if you'd call it a trend, but it seems to be there, is the independent contractor aspect or industry. It's growing. I don't know how fast it is, but it has some effect on the business, especially, you know, small business owners.
So what do you mean by independent contractors inside your world?
Well, they're not employees. They rent space from an operator. And the challenge with that is, you know, in fact, there's legislation right now called the Cosmetology Tip and Fairness Act. And the reason it's in effect and why they're trying to pass it is, well, two reasons why. One is tip income. You know, we're typically receive tips. The challenge with that is it gets unreported. And so, you know, and we, in our case, we report it through the record keeping transactions.
Cards.
So it's income, but it's a benefit to our staff, because when they buy houses and cars, they definitely have a higher income level due to that, instead of it being hidden. So that's the reality. The other part is the independent contractor is their deal, because our might be on a cash basis, it gets underreported. And so the government, Department of Labor, actually thinks a hairdresser is making only, you know, low 20s income. And, like, you know, my average employee after a year is making 30 plus, you know, and beyond that after they continue to grow. The challenge with that is that, in banking, you know, you need to show strong balance sheets in business. And if you're an employee or an independent contractor, you're showing that you're only making 20, you can't qualify to buy a house. But the money's there.
So someone might have a salon, DJ salon, and you've got four persons running a space in there, and some of this underreporting happens. So is the legislation pro booth rental,
trying to keep record and track of it, because what happens is, here's the issue: the restaurant industry has this credit; they get a tax credit for reporting the tip income. And so we're trying to get the same legislation in our industry, so that, because I have to pay FICA tax on it, and I don't mind paying FICA tax on money that I paid them, but money that they received that I don't have to pay, that I have to pay tax on, is kind of it's a large expense at the end of the year. For us, it costs us, you know, $80,000.
Yeah, and
of
it
additional
also,
tax money.
So I'm curious, how would that legislation police that possible hidden tip
they
revenue?
They would start making everybody do 1091s. 1090s, is that what they call it? 1090s. So everybody would have to report. So it would be actually, IRS would have a little bit more.
And it could help your business, because it'll be less and less the contractors when they see, as a business owner or as a contractor, there's a lot of taxes on top of those revenues.
Exactly. Well, you know, us being a poor state already, that money, we're not talking little. We're talking millions and millions of dollars. If you looked at all of it throughout the country, there's millions and millions of unreported income. And I'm sure it happens in all industries. I'm just looking at it, you know, making a level playing field.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's
so
smart.
One of our guests that we had a week ago, Sky Carlisle, I believe it was, he operates in the social media realm. Do you integrate, and how did you integrate, if you did, social media into your business? So in other words, 30, 40 years ago when we did business, we didn't have social media, we didn't have computers, any of that. So how has that technology changed, and do you integrate it or implement that into your marketing machine?
Nowadays, you know, I mean, who doesn't have a cell phone that's connected to the internet, you know, Snapchat and Facebook and
to your
Twitter.
Back pocket.
Everything is out there. So and, you know, in the millennials, and that's how they communicate. I mean, our workforce is the millennial group, and that's how they communicate. We're involved in all the social media that's out there. And again, it's just an expansion of the brand awareness.
Do you have a Pinterest account, Mark, that you post some of the hairstyles and everything?
Yes.
See, that's
the newest thing we're adding. There's so many layers to social media. You know, you got to measure, you know, where's it most effective? I think people are still finding that out. There's still a lot of research. I've done a lot of work. I just attended I belong to Vistage, which is a CEO organization, and they brought in a speaker. I can't remember his name, but he has a whole book on and research on how social media really works and how it's effective. Because it's one thing just to have it, but it's another thing to be effective with it. But I think We see results with it. And it's everything goes viral. You know, the kids, the students, like, for example, the Institute, you know, they're putting their work up. It's connected to our brand. And so even the staff, the clients. So it's a huge – everything becomes viral. A style can be a trend in a day just by somebody putting it out there. A great color, a great, you know, nail. Somebody's doing nail art. It gets out there and everybody sees it.
So is there a way, because you help in the film industry and you send a design crew out, are you allowed to get permission to get the actress or the movie star where you're helping them and put it in social media, or is that a no-no?
It's allowed. You know, there's certain things that, you know, that are licensing agreements. For example, even some of the images that we do, there's certain agreements that we have to abide by when we're doing that. Sometimes we can't even shoot the models, or especially on that side of it.
Yeah, I figured that would be kind of privy. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've kind of talked a lot about your history and what you're doing now and some things, but let's talk about some future outlook. Tell us where you see your salon going, the Mark Pardo Salon and Spa, in 3, 5, 10 years. What do you envision out there? What are you changing? How are you adapting to the new buying cycles?
You know, we're actually in expansion mode right now. We're going to Win Rock. We'll be there. We're looking at some of the expansions going on in Coronado. In fact, I just talked yesterday and today on phone calls with some other concepts. Aveda has what they call a retail concept. They're called experience centers, which we first brought into Cottonwood Mall when they first came in. And then Estee Lauder bought Aveda, and so it changed the market. And then that's when we built a store at Coors Nelson to take out of the mall space and expanded the services.
So you're going to go Coronado and Win Rock right across the street from each other?
Yeah, they're different concepts, though.
Okay.
One would be,
explain that.
The Experience Center is a corporate identity store. It has the Aveda look to what their corporate stores. They have about 150 of those in North America, and we would probably do that there. And then we would have two chairs in there, and then it would be a feeder location to our Win Rock location.
That's pretty cool. And how about you in the business? What do you see yourself? You said you're replacing yourself as Train the Trainers. You're not cutting hairstyles anymore, are you?
You know, I still do it twice a month. I work every other Wednesday. I work about 4 hours. I still do it because I'm good at it. I mean, that's what built the business. But I also do it my main reason for me doing it is I for training purposes. You know, these new kids, they're in the training program, so they're with me 4 or 5 hours, and I'm giving them – you know, everything that I've learned, the best tips that I can give them, just give them insight to information that they wouldn't be able to get.
You know, have you ever read the E-Myth Mastery, Michael E. Gerber?
That was the book. That's the book you see why Mark Pardo's became Mark Pardo's.
Bingo. And that's what I did with Exhibit 2, but I haven't been quite as successful as you. But I'm telling you, you get out of your own way. You train the trainer.
I was that person in that book, pulling my hair out, wearing every hat you could possibly imagine. You know, going crazy and wondering, you know, is this really what it's all about? And when I read that book, it made sense for me. And I've actually went to his lectures. I've read his other books. And to me, that was the secret.
So can you share with our audience, because they may not have read the book, of a little bit just how you incorporated that in the mindset in your business? Because really, that is so smart. And every business owner should be in business for an exit strategy.
I have a saying. The system will set you free. You know, you've heard the saying, the truth will set you free. In business, I think it's the system will set you free. You've got to have systems to everything that you do. We think that what we do, working in the art, the creative industry, it still needs a system. You know, that's why the experience wheel is there. It's present for the purpose of delivering consistency. And that's the thing that I think our industry kind of lacks. You know, we're not at the level of a doctor, but if you go get a tonsillectomy in Dallas and New York and Phoenix, the procedure from beginning to end is going to be pretty much the same because there's a medical standard. You go get a bob in the same three cities because it's artistic perception. It could be all over the map. So the consumer doesn't have that consistency that they probably should get. Now, I think with Aveda and their branding and their purposing and education, they just reinvented their training system of cutting hair for the institutes. It's called Learn Aveda, and it's the best I've ever seen in terms of what's available for a new professional coming in. It's going to create the consistency. It brands us better against our competitors, and it creates consistency for the consumer. They will now almost can become to expect a certain consistency through the Aveda brand.
You know, And you continually train your employees and everybody that goes through your class. And there's different levels. Like, yes, you could go off of different tiers. Could you explain that? If someone's coming in for the first time, how do they know who to ask for?
Well, we have the call center, which will refer based on kind of pre-scheme to what that guest is looking for, what their needs are, what kind of results are they looking for. We do have a tier system of experience and different levels of stylists, and they earn that through their performance. But one of the key things that we measure is retention. How well are they keeping their clients? And we measure their retention factor, their sales performance, their productivity rates, their domains of what they sell. And so these numbers really, to me, indicate how their ability to retain clients. Because, you know, I always say we're in the relationship business selling to parents. But if we're in that business of relationships, what's the most important aspect? And that's trust. You know, so if you can trust the results, and products are going to create the results in it, it's included, you're going to develop that relationship. And that's what's going to create the retention. And that's what's going to send us back. And that, if they're happy and feel trusted, they trust us, they're going to send their friends and family to us.
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. Mark Gonzalez, the owner of Pardo's. I'm Jeffrey Candelari, along with
DJ Heckes.
Talk about our B2B real quickly here, DJ.
Yes, April 26th. And Mark, thank you for donating to the live raffle, with all proceeds benefiting American Lung Association in New Mexico.
Thank you.
This event's coming up April 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. It's at the Sandia Resort and Casino. If you have not RSVP'd, I suggest you do. It'll save you $5 instead of paying $30 at the door. It's $25 for pre-admission tickets. And the first 110 people that finish signing up will have access to the free roundtables that take place 2 hours before the event. You can go to exhib-it.com. That's exhib-it.com, or call 828-0574.
Mark, I'm fascinated by something you said earlier. I think the angioplasty was invented in 1964. Anyway, there's a certain standard of technique that's ubiquitous along all health lines for doctors to perform that procedure. So cutting hair with some scissors in 1829, because I think scissors were invented by, actually it was Michelangelo, or not Michelangelo, the other guy, his counterpart. But anyway, is the technique of cutting hair, has that changed? And if so, how do you integrate those different techniques into your staff? Kind of a big question, but technique.
Technique is you know, there's the artistic perception of it, you know, the element of it. But techniques, everything's kind of been done, created once. It just gets recreated. It's like music. I mean, same musical notes always exist. It's just how you put them together and make something new out of it.
What about the implements associated with that? Scissors used to be what they are, but now they've changed.
There's always progress. You know, the tools always progress. It's just there's you need a lot. For me, I mean, I have probably 20, 25 different types of shears. All have special purposes, different effects, clippers. You know, my whole theory is we create shapes. It's not about how much you take off. It's how much you leave. So it's a big paradigm shift in how we look. It's really an element of design. Form follows function.
Oh, wow. It's the David inside that big hunk of marble.
Exactly.
You like that.
It's what you leave, not what you take off. Because what's on the floor doesn't matter. It's what you've left that matters.
That's fascinating. Again, Mark Gonzalez, thank you for being a guest on ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday. We'll be back with you after this brief message. Welcome back, Albuquerque business community. Welcome to our second segment of ABQ Connect Now. We are a business radio program. We are with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria, along with
DJ Heckes.
And thank you again, DJ, for being our exclusive sponsor of ABQ Connect Now as the owner of Exhibit.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Our second segment guest.
Our second guest today is co-founder and co-owner of the New Mexico Escape Room. Now, I don't know if any of you have heard about this, but it's really cool, and I'm excited that our team's going to be using it soon, Darren. So, Darren Guido, welcome.
Hey,
as
thank
our guest
you guys.
Today.
It's good to be here. Appreciate you guys having me out.
So, let's talk about the New Mexico Escape Room, exactly what it entails for our listeners, and it's the first to market in the state of New Mexico.
Correct. So, we are the first live escape game here in New Mexico. And basically, for those who don't know what an escape room is or an escape game is, essentially you are in a room as a player. Inside the room are various clues, puzzles, riddles, things like that you as a player will have to solve, which will open things up, locks or drawers or something like that unconventionally. They will open, which will lead you to another clue, which will lead you to something else opening, which will lead you to another clue, right? Ultimately, you are looking for something, depending on which scenario you choose, that will help you escape the room. So right now we have three very unique scenarios that people can choose from. One is themed like a Victorian office set in the Wild West, where you're looking for a hidden treasure map of Jesse James. The other one is a 70s themed conspiracy theory type room, where you are a news reporter trying to find an article that a colleague was writing about a connection between JFK and the Watergate scandal. You know, now all of a sudden he's gone missing, you got to find his article. And the third one, which is also our hardest room, is called the cabin. That one, you are detectives searching through a serial killer's cabin, about information about who he is, his latest victim, things like that, so that you can go and save her. So they kind of give you an objective to do. You have something you're looking for or something you're trying to find in order to escape, of course, within the hour time frame that you're allotted for each game.
So really what you're doing is you're creating an experience both
Absolutely.
For a personal consumer and companies.
Correct.
And tell me the why behind this.
Yeah, so for us, it's, you know, our background is haunted houses and entertainment. And so we enjoy, my wife and I enjoy building and providing this experience. I mean, when you come into one of our rooms, it's very immersive. So we've put a lot of work into the detail, into the feeling, into the things that you're going to touch and interact with. So you now have been taken out of the environment of the world and put into the environment that we want you to feel like you're a part of. And so it's been fun for us to be able to offer something new and exciting to Albuquerque, especially like you said, being the first to market has been exciting. And then offer something that people can do aside from going to the movies and the same type of activities people have been doing for years and years. This is something that you can now enjoy with colleagues, with friends, with family. It's kind of open to all kinds of people to interact with. So it's been fun for us to do that.
Our guest is Darren Guido. He's the owner of Escape Room. Given that it's a new experience, it's really a service, it's a new product, if
Correct.
You will, in the marketplace, Albuquerque being what it is, 800,000 persons, mm-hmm. Not necessarily a monolithic population. How do you introduce this as a concept into the marketplace? How do you understand if it's working? How do you see sustainability? How do you measure success?
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time, and like I said earlier, our background's haunted houses. So being in that industry, we had a lot of preparation into moving forward with this particular project. And so we spent a lot of time researching the market, which we already kind of knew how Albuquerque would entertain, things like that. And then marketing was our biggest strategy point, was getting out there the word to people and doing that on a very low cost. And so for us, Facebook, social media, things like that were an easy way for us to get the information out to people. And then once we, you know, once we first tested our first room, we knew we had a good product and people were going to enjoy this. We also looked at other markets. We went out to Phoenix. We've been to Denver, Houston, some of the larger markets to see how people interact with these type of games. And so we knew that this was something that Albuquerque, well, I didn't know. I was had a really good feeling that Albuquerque would accept this idea. And then our whole market was based on a percentage of being booked. We thought, okay, if we could be this booked at this time frame for X amount, we would do really well. And so far, we've been past that. We've done a lot better than we anticipated to do. And so that's been really fun for us to see the amount of people come out exceeding our expectations. And so from sustainability, you know, our plan was this last year for 2015 to operate three rooms. We did that. Now what do? It's the question that we're still asking. You know, once you've done a scenario, it would be the same if you came and did it again. So changing the rooms up to offer something new to people, expanding into another location. I mean, those are things that we could look at just to offer more scenarios to people in order to maintain our business. The cool thing is there's so many people of the 800,000, you know, we can only do so many people in a year anyway. So we kind of look at that and say, okay, how many people have done a room, you know, over the course of the weekend? We can only do so many people or during the week. So we just look and see if people are still coming and they're new, then maybe the room stays the same for a while. And unfortunately, those who've already done it, you've kind of already done it.
Our guest in the first segment, Mark, who owns Pardo's, he's got a very specific client, mostly women that are a little older, mostly image-conscious women with some affluence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very specific audience. And I bet if I drilled a little deeper, we can even tell what zip codes those persons emanate from.
Right.
In your world, who's responding to the escape room? Is it a young person? Is it an older person? Is it an educated person, non-educated person? Who's your client?
Our key demographic right now are 25 to 44-year-olds, mostly 60% women, 62% women, to about 38, 40% men. They have dual income. Some have, you know, one to two kids or no kids. So that's kind of our range, and it seems to be a very, you know, that's the range that everybody wants, right? Dual income, things like that.
Do these women, mostly the heart of your clientele so far, are they women coming together with other women? Are they independently attending the escape room experience on their own? How does that kind of work?
So it's, you know, it's kind of both. What it is if it's women coming as a group of women, that's what we'll see, or it's the women women booking for their families. You know, the husbands, you know, they're coming with their dates, they're coming with their kids, so they're looking for things to do with their family. So there, I think that's kind of what we're seeing our most. And then we look at our social media and all of our demographics evolve with that. Who's following us on Facebook? Who interacts with us on Facebook? When people come in, all of our Google Analytics stuff all point to women being our key demographic of who's coming to our pages and booking with us.
You know, and we're also you're also getting into a new audience of corporate team building. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. So we have two types of booking. As DJ said, the corporate stuff, and then we do weekend stuff is open to friends and family. So the corporate stuff is what we're really trying to push for 2016. We offer different pricing structures, different times during the week that are available for people to come out. They can bring their companies. We can book up to, you know, 28 to 30 people at a time between the three different scenarios that we have, or we can run them, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8 people in one scenario at one time. So the cool thing about the corporate stuff is we can build on the team building aspect. So when a company comes in, from the moment they're there, we start talking to them about what they're going to experience. Here's what you can do. Here's what not to do. And then when you're in there, be thinking about your personal benefit or things that you're contributing to the group. And then think about the group as a whole, the things that were successful, not so successful, things like that. And then once they're done with their hour in the room, either they make it or they don't. And if they don't, we come in with sad faces. And then we just try to build on that. So, you know, we ask each person individually, what did you think? How did you think your group did? What do you think was successful? Where do you think you guys failed? And then we try and build up that whole communication piece with them afterwards.
And it's really good for team camaraderie. And right. Do you have like a mirror where an owner can watch the dynamics of the team to find out who their leaders and leadership development may be?
Right. So how that works is we actually have a video system, so we can see it. We have cameras inside the room along with microphones, so we can hear and see everything from an outside television monitor. And so if, you know, we'll let people watch, usually I suggest that the manager or whoever wants to watch has done the room before for a few reasons. That way, number one, that they know what they're looking at. You know, they understand what's happening inside the room. Because if you don't, then we end up spending most time going, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And I had to tell them, well, they're looking for this. This is their next step. And so they kind of end up, you know, trying to learn more than about the room than they are about their employees or their team. And so then they can watch and then we can take notes. If they know, then they know what's happening next. And we can say, okay, here's what the next step is. Let's see how they get to that process. And some people do really well and they communicate. Other teams don't. And sometimes it takes a little bit longer for them, you know, to get to that final stage of whatever puzzle or clue they're working on.
Our guest is Darren Guido. He's the owner of Escape Room. So it's really almost a human laboratory.
It is.
where human behavioral manifestation literally plays out. How long is the experience generally?
So people get 1 hour inside the room. Of course, if they make it out faster, then the hour time frame turns into 45 minutes or 30, depending on how fast they can make it out. But typically those who are on site for about an hour and a half, you know, the 10, 15 minutes before, just going over what it is they're about to experience. Then 1 hour inside the room, and then we spend about 10, 15 minutes afterwards just breaking down for corporate team building, breaking down their time inside the room and then how they felt their group did as a whole. And, of course, like we talked about, individually per person. So,
you know, you say women are your target audience, and that's what's been the past. Let's talk about some of the different variety of people that you see coming through. You said families and husbands and wives and women. But I see this like wedding parties, bachelor parties. I see this getting even bigger because this ties in also, Jeffrey, that we were talking about earlier and last week, is creating that experience
right
for the consumer. So if you're talking to the audience, tell them about the experience, what it's like to be in there. I know you mentioned a little bit, but what is it like?
Yeah, so the cool thing about being inside the room is that you can imagine as you walk in, everything seems like it's a normal room. Everything looks and just like it would be. Everything's in place where it should be. And so you start going through and people will find something which will be a piece of paper that has something written on it, or, you know, maybe a picture will open up and there's something behind it, or, you know, a box will open which will give you a key. And then once you start unlocking something, then you get something else. And so that excitement tends to grow as the room is kind of, because once you unlock something, you figure something out, you find a four-digit number or you find a word that opens a lock, and that kind of experience just starts to build. And so you can tell that, you know, it locks all of a sudden. Now you've gone from 10 to maybe 8 down to 4 to 3. Now you're on your last one. It's that whole experience is now we've found the last thing. The clock's ticking down. I mean, the excitement continues the whole time. So it's really fun. The last 5 minutes of every game is always the best because that's when people are most excited. That's when they're running through it. They're trying to find that last thing, or they're trying to find the map or find the serial killer, you know, then get out of the room with that, you know, with that information. And so, you know, when people are kind of heading to that climax, it's really fun for us to be able to offer that, you know what I mean? Like to see that and to experience that, because it's a raw emotion that you get from people, you know. And so, you know, you actually get to see somebody being excited. You get to, you know, feel that emotion with them. And you also get the other side when they don't make it out and we have to go in, and you get the sad emotion, and they, you know, you can tell that they've done a really good job and they were really close. And so we kind of have to, you know, to talk to them about that and say, you know, how do you feel? And, you know, what happened, and kind of talk to them about their experiences. So it's both sides of the coin, where it's the good, the fun time when they make it out, and also the sad time when they don't. But either way, what's really fun for us is that people who come out, make it or don't make it, have a great time. I mean, it's a fun experience for all of them. And of course, you know, all of our reviews on Facebook and stuff can kind of attest to that.
So karaoke was invented in Japan, Disneyland, 1955, Anaheim, California. More of a vision of what an experience would be as opposed to a roller coaster amusement park experience. Where did the escape room experience, where did that manifest?
So our in our research and talking with other escape room owners, really over in Asia is where this live version of escape rooms began. It's been, I mean, some of our research, there's been some escape rooms around for the last 10 years, then slowly made its way through Europe, into Canada, has quite a few escape rooms, and then it hit the United States. And we're seeing about 2 years ago when it really became big here in the United States. And of course, LA, New York, those type of places really got it big, and then slowly started making its way, just like everything else, right, to the middle of the United States. So it's been around for a few years here in the United States, which has been pretty fun.
Instead of the person being a passive experience, as in theater, where you're sitting in a chair and experiencing the theatrics in a passive regard, this is more participatory experience, right?
Absolutely.
So that probably changes the dynamics of all this.
And it changes your experience with that as well. And that's what we talk to people a lot. When you go to a movie, you're just watching the movie. While you can be engaged with the characters, and when they're up, you're up, and when they're down, but when you leave there, you've left, you've kind of watched the movie, that was a good movie, and you kind of move on. When people leave our facility, I get emails from people or comments on Facebook that we sat around, we talked for 2-3 hours at dinner about this. You know what I mean? People broke down their experience. Well, you found this, and you found this, and you touched this, and oh, I forgot about that. So they will sit there, and they'll break down that experience. And then they'll talk about it to all their friends, you've got to try this. And then once they try it, then they kind of bring that back around. So it's been fun that once you're done, you're not done. You know, you don't just leave going, okay, that was fun. You leave there trying to talk about every little moment that happened and all the things that you missed that somebody else found, or the things that you guys found together, or how you came up with that. I mean, so that's the cool thing is, you know, inside the room, there's a puzzle or there's something that you've got to figure out what it means. And so when you come to that aha moment that this is what it is, that's the crowning moment of that particular puzzle, that because you figure that out. And so that releases, of course, endorphins, and then your brain wants to now move on to the next one. Or you sometimes find so many things that you can't, you know, decipher what it is, and then you break into groups. And what's cool is, you know, if you book with us, say you're on the weekends, you know, you could be with other folks. So the two of you could book, and there could be 6 other people you don't know. Well, once you're in there and you start working together, those strangers become your friends. You know, and so now you've experienced something with somebody who you had no idea. Now you share something in common. And we've had people actually leave, you know, show up as strangers, leave as friends, and go to a restaurant or go to a bar and have some drinks with friends. with each other.
What about the opposite? Do you ever have where you have strangers in there and you have a dominator in the room or something that they don't get along with everybody?
We've had it where there's definitely somebody who's dominating, but it's not ever been to the point where they argue. Usually what happens is somebody will just relieve themselves and just hang out in a corner. They'll just stop. They won't interact with the group because they're not enjoying it. And, you know, actually we just got a 1-star review on Google this past weekend because somebody did that. They felt like they couldn't be involved, and of course, I don't know who this is or anything else, but I mean, it's those type of things happen, and it's going to happen, and we understand that, and we can't, of course, appease everybody, right? So we're going to do our best to offer this experience to people.
Our guest is Darren Guido, and he is the owner of The Escape Room. If you'd like to get a hold of any of our guests, including Darren, give me a call, 604-9081, 604-9081. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria, along with
DJ Heckes.
And DJ, you want to talk about our B2B Expo?
I do. I'm also going to talk about our ABQ Connect Now event coming up. Jeffrey, it's March 31st, Thursday, from 5 to 8 p.m. It's at the Canyon Club at 911 Four Hills Road. It's absolutely free. So if you want to come network and really connect with other businesses, I suggest you come. You can call 604-9081 to RSVP. That's Thursday, March 31st, from 5 to 8 p.m. Also, I'm proud to announce is the Exhibit's 9th annual B2B event. It's the Expo on April 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. It's at the Sandia Resort and Casino. It moved. This is the 9th year that's grown from a couple hundred people to 700 people last year, and we're expecting 1,000 this year. We have sponsors, and Darren, thank you. You're actually one of our platinum sponsors from the Mexico Escape Room.
Yes, thank you.
And we have the best local brand going to be unveiled, the winner of the contest. We've got a live auction with all the proceeds that are going to benefit American Lung Association in New Mexico. And what I'm really proud is we have 97 exhibitors that you're going to want to come talk to and see what they do and how you can connect and experience just talking with everyone in the room. It's a great event. And we have food. It's $25 if you RSVP online, and it's $30 at the door. You can go to exhib-it.com. That's exhib-it.com. Or just call 828-0574 to RSVP.
Thanks for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. Again, Jeffrey Candelaria and DJ Heckes. So getting back to that experience and the communalness of it, there are lots of restaurants around the country, including a couple here in Albuquerque, that have a communal dinner table night where you're sitting with folks you don't know. Kind of Japanese Kitchen has that same experience, but you end up having a communal breaking of bread and you leave as friends in many cases. So that it sounds like that's very much part of what makes this so unique at the Escape Room.
Yeah, we have a good time. We really enjoy being able to offer that to people. And I think that's something that you don't get everywhere. You know what I mean? You don't always get that piece where you can interact with people and leave with that experience from folks. So it's been exciting for us to be able to offer this to people. And we hope that we can continue this for years to come. I don't know how much longer this is going to last, but we definitely want to be on top of the escape game industry here. Of course, being the first to market, you never know what's going to happen. You don't know how people are going to interact. So now that we've kind of been doing this, June 2015 is when we opened. Now we kind of look at this and go, okay, how are people interacting? What are things that we can do to exceed that interaction, to enhance that experience? And those are things that we're trying to develop for the future. 2016, we've got some cool things in mind. Some cool ideas that we're trying to build on, and we'll just see what happens with that. But absolutely, the experience piece is definitely for us what we want to provide people, most importantly of all.
You know, Darren, I see that tying in. You know, it used to be when I was a kid, we played Monopoly, board games, things that were absolutely more competitive. And what I'm seeing is my children and adult children are playing games that are very collaborative in nature, where it's not so competitive. It's more of let's save the world and how can we work together? If we don't, we're not going to win united. I think this really ties in with that collaboration and what your demographic audience, 25 to 44, 45,
wants and is starving for.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot, especially with board games. While in a board game, you know, Monopoly, things like that, you're playing together, you're experiencing the game together, but you're still competing against the person across the table from you. But like you said, some of these games now you're building on that experience and you're trying to work together, which is fun, because what happens in that experience is everybody comes with a different idea, a different mindset, a different way of looking at things. And so you might come in thinking that you know it all, and all of a sudden now you're in the room and you have no idea what to do, but you have somebody you can rely on that's going to help you, you know, get through this. And then, you know, what's cool about it is somebody might have an idea, and then idea gets built onto something else, and sometimes ultimately coming together as a group to find the final, you know, solution that's going to help you do whatever it is you're looking for. And so it's been fun to say, what about this? Well, I don't know, but let's try this, or let's try this, and then those ideas just keep building to find the map, or to save the serial killer.
So let's talk about how you got to the New Mexico Escape Room from your experience. And your wife is co-owner, Carrie,
correct,
right?
Yes, my wife, Carrie.
And so let's talk about how you went from the Realm of Darkness haunted house at Cottonwood Mall. And I think you did that, what, in 2010?
5 years, yes,
yeah.
2010.
So how did you take that, which is totally different because I don't go to haunted houses. Okay,
right.
I get too scared. But I would definitely do what you do, and I can't wait to bring my team.
Yeah, so the transition was it was actually a pretty quick transition. We started the haunted house in 2010, and after 5 years, we ended up losing the mall. We were at the old Mervyn's, I believe it was, at the Cottonwood Mall. And, of course, they've put in a con since then, and they want somebody more long-term. So we lost that space at the end of last year, and we were looking for something else to do. Well, that's very fun. It's seasonal. The cool thing about the haunted house for us is it – you know, it builds on the set design, the story, the emotions that we want you to feel inside the haunted house. We were able to move that over to the escape room. So we actually went to a convention for haunted houses, if you could believe that, right? And so we saw that escape rooms are coming up in the haunted house industry, and of course in other industries as well. But we looked and go, I thought, what's an escape room? I had no idea what it was. And so we talked to some folks. I thought this was the best idea in the entire world. And so from our drive from St. Louis back to Albuquerque from the convention, we had a business plan written up, and we had all of our ideas and things that we wanted to do. And we, you know, then from there, we went and actually experienced a couple of escape rooms ourselves just to kind of, you know, solidify that this is what we wanted to do, make sure that this was something that we wanted to get into. And then once we did that, I mean, we hit the ground running. So that was from March, and then we were open by June with our first scenario. So it was a pretty quick turnaround. But, you know, having the haunted house, we would set up, you know, in August and be running by September. So these 2 month turnaround, 3 months, I mean, we were used to that kind of pressure and building a set, creating a story, you know, finding all the details to go along with it. So this was an easy transition for us with our background to move over to the escape room. And what's been fun is to know that, you know, the demographic is much wider for the escape room than it is the haunted house. Obviously, DJ, you wouldn't come. Jeffrey, maybe not either. But that you're not my demographic. You know, demographic for haunted houses is college age, teenagers.
Shh, the audience like doesn't know that. No, just kidding.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, it's been fun to be able to offer this, and especially for the team building aspect. I mean, that's something that, you know, for corporate team building, you can always do the ropes courses or things like that. And so this is something that people can do. They can come as they are dressed, and then we offer something that they can work together and leave with some kind of concrete information or, you know, ideas about how to better the group versus the haunted house. You come through, you get scared, and then you kind of go home.
Yeah, it's interesting. The communalness is what's fascinating for me. I think that's one of the parallels to, let's say, why football's so popular in America. People don't think about it, but it's really tribalism. It's my tribe beating your tribe. There's a sense of community because the Broncos beat the Cowboys. Guess what?
Go Broncos!
Who cares about the Broncos? Did it really mean anything to anybody's life? People don't even know who the hell you are, yet people really get, right, you know, so excited about the Broncos winning when Denver is, you know, in another city. They don't even know we exist. But it's that whole communalness, that sense of we're all wearing orange and whatever the hell they wear, the Halloween costumes called the Broncos. But it's still the community, and I think that's what you're talking about. You're building a really very, I guess you'd say, brief communal experience that people leave with.
We are, and so that's what's been fun is when people leave, I get a lot of people who book, and I say, how'd you hear about us? Oh, my friend did it. Okay, do you know what this is? No, I have no idea. They said it was fun, so I came and I booked and I want to experience this. So because the experience that they left with was so strong, they went and shared that with others who then book without having any idea really what it is they're getting into. And so that's been really fun, you know, to be able to hear that from people and hear those types of reviews and get that from other people outside the community.
Well, you probably bring something else that we don't think about. But in football, if you're not 8 feet tall and weighing 900 pounds, you're not going to be effective in football or in track if you're not quick, whatever. But really anybody with a mind and a curiosity can participate, and the key word being participate in this experience. So notwithstanding, you know, age, color, creed, big, small, whatever, you can still walk away with, wow, a very unique experience.
Absolutely. You guys can be involved in this. I mean, we've had some who think, oh, I got to be super smart or book smart. I'll tell you what, some of those people who are book smart tend to overthink the room and don't do really well. And then sometimes you think kids can't be involved, but sometimes kids do really well because they can see things in this natural kind of, this is the way it could be.
Curiosity.
Versus, I mean, adults have this, you know, we have this, this shield built up in our brains where something can only be something, and kids can like, oh, this one thing could be five other things. And so absolutely, you know, you don't have to have any type of experience. Come as you are. You don't have to learn about anything before you show up. We provide everything you need inside the room to be able to escape.
You know, Darren, you're really a risk taker. I loved what you said before. You know, you were losing your facility for the haunted house on the west side, and you went to a convention and you said, you know what, we're going to do this. And you didn't look back. Where do you see yourself going? Right now you said you're limited to the number of people in the rooms. You have three rooms, right?
Correct.
So what do you see in 3 or 5 years?
That's something that we don't know yet. I mean, we're definitely kind of thinking about that. I think part of our next step is to start to communal, all right, for us with other escape room owners and see what they're doing and what their plans are and what's worked for them. I mean, we have ideas, but it's always, you know, is our idea being done somewhere else and it's failed? How, you know, what failed for them? And is it just the concept? Is it things that they did wrong? What can I do to make that better? So, I mean, for us, it's kind of like, now where do we go? And I think this industry is so new for everybody. I mean, this is, like I said, within the last 2 years over the whole entire country, that this is, there's not enough information here for people to kind of tell you what the next 3 to 5 years are going to be, because nobody's even been around for that long.
Yeah, and I'd like to also ask you, you were funded by West, which is proof of your business success, and you were a product of Steps. Can you share with us really quick what that means, how you get started?
Yeah, so that was really fun for us. I keep saying that's fun. Everything's fun. This entire industry is awesome. I really appreciate this. But for West, they were the first ones to loan us money for the haunted house. And so when we were looking to get started, we went to banks. You know, my partner at the time went to family and things like that, and West kind of backed us. And since then, they backed us every single year. So when we moved over to the escape room, we actually paid off all of our loans, and so now I'm able to work with them. Steps was introduced to us, of course, when we first started the escape room, and they helped us, you know, with the planning process and how to get things through the city and stuff like that.
So if anybody wants to book a room and an experience, where do they go?
Yeah, so to book with us, you can just go to our website at nmescaperoom.com. You can follow us on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/nmescaperoom. All the information is there to book or to call or contact us, and we respond within minutes.
Thank you for being a guest, Darren Guida, the co-owner of Escape Room. Don't forget our next ABQ Connect Now event, March 31st at the Canyon Club, 5 to 8 p.m. Give me a call, 604-9081. Thank you, Albuquerque, for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now.